All right. Hello, everyone. From Pueblo West, Colorado. And Ken, I am recording as an FYI. Welcome to the Gentle Healing Group. Oh, you know what I didn't do? I didn't pick out a song. Isn't that funny? I didn't pick out a song, which I usually do start with a song, don't I, as a kind of a soft start. So I guess I'll pick one out quickly. My computer has been a little slow. I had already turned it off. I think I teased it. I had already turned it off and because I thought I was going over to Ken's, and then some bad weather came in, and we decided that it wasn't a good idea for me to go to Ken's, and so I had to turn my computer back on, and it's never been this slow coming back on. I swear it's like I thought I was in bed for the night. I didn't want to get back up. But here we go. This is the song that popped up when iTunes opened up. This is the song that popped up, so this is the song I'm going to go with. You're probably all familiar with it. It's by Michael Jackson, and it's called Man in the Mirror.
Broken bottle down, and one then goes.
There we go. We've had a song. So again, welcome to the Gentle Healing Group. And of course, we'll start the way that we always start, which is giving you all the chance to share based on your experience with the homework in the last week. In the last week, we looked at workbook lessons 129 to 135. We listened to a brief Michael Langford audio, and we also read NTI Hebrews 8 through 13. So, who would like to get us started by sharing? And Cheryl, I noticed that the message you're posting is that we're listening to Jacqueline Eckert and Connie Poole with Growing with NTI. You might need to update that, just so people don't get confused. I know I get confused easily. Well, I'm not seeing any hands popping up right away. I do love to hear what your experience is with the homework. So maybe what I'll do is I'll do it a little differently this time in order to see if I can get some feedback from y'all. Maybe what I'll do is just kind of ask questions and see if y'all respond to the questions. So let me open up the course to lesson 129. Lesson 129, beyond this world, there is a world I want. The previous lesson, which actually for us would have been, quote, the previous week, was the world I see holds nothing that I want. And lesson 129 says you cannot stop with the idea the world is worthless, meaning the world I see holds nothing that I want. For unless you see that there is something else to hope for, you will only be depressed. Our emphasis is not on giving up the world, but on exchanging it for what is far more satisfying, filled with joy, and capable of offering you peace. And then it asks the question, think you this world can offer that to you? So I suppose a question that I could ask in relationship, I'm remembering the tip I made that day, but I'm not going to mention it yet. I suppose a question I could ask in relationship to this is anybody finding any challenges or great interest? It could be either. In letting go of valuing the world. Is anybody looking at that? Do we have any experiences this week with letting go of valuing what's in the world and maybe beginning to value something else that's beyond the world? Regina is going in and out. Let me bring a... Oh, not for everybody. Okay. Okay, thanks for letting me know before I went to a lot of trouble to try and correct that. Okay, good, good. So maybe Doreen, you're the... Actually, it's on your end. The audio is going in and out. All right, Kathy, the mic is yours.
So I definitely remember reading this particular lesson because the part where it says, unless you see that there's something else to hope for, you will only be depressed. And I remember, you know, in my own mind, saying, I do feel depressed. I do feel a bit down. And, you know, the question at the very end, think you this world can offer offer you this peace that it speaks of? You know, no. I mean, the answer is emphatically no. I don't think this world can offer me the peace that the Course, you know, shares that I could, that is actually already mine. At the time, I wouldn't be depressed if I knew that, if I actually knew that in direct experience. So this idea that, you know, beyond this world, there is a world I want, it's like, so what? I mean, what does that really mean, you know, beyond this world? I have no idea what's beyond this world. It's only an imaginative idea that I can conjure up, that it's another illusion. Even thinking about the idea of beyond this world, there is a world I want. It's like, what does that really mean? It doesn't even mean anything to me. I mean, it feels like more imagination. And I get that it's the ego that's, you know, involved in what I'm saying, because it feels like an unwillingness to completely let go of everything I want in the world. I mean, it just doesn't even seem possible in this little mind of mine that I would be able to do that. So on the other side of it, it does feel like it takes something beyond my capabilities, but I do feel a frustration. It's some days, some weeks, and a couple, 3 weeks now, it just feels like words to me. It just doesn't feel, it just doesn't, it's not resonating in a direct experience sort of a way. And so that kind of depresses me sometimes. And I try to remember to laugh. And while I have the opportunity, I'll just thank dear Jacqueline and Connie for their hour beforehand, because, you know, sometimes without their laughter, it's like, I don't really even feel like showing up for class some days. Yet I still find myself here, so I'm going to give up the mic.
Yeah, well, on this end, I giggled a little bit when you said you don't even feel like showing up for class sometimes, because for years and years and years, you know, when I have been responsible to teach an MPP class, to teach seven steps, now to teach gentle healing, it seems like there is always this thought that I don't want to go. It's always there. It was there tonight. It would be so nice not to have to go teach gentle healing tonight. You know, I mean, that thought is just always, always there. And I always have to step over that thought in order to go to class. And I'm always glad I did. And I'm always glad I did. But I can see that for me, one thing that has kept me committed is I'm the teacher. It's a lot harder to not show up when you're the teacher. As the student, it's probably a lot easier to just decide I'm not going. And in fact, if you look at the numbers, we have 32 people here, which isn't bad. I mean, that's good. But do you remember where we started? You know, we're at 50% now. So the ego is most definitely going to try and stop us. And it's just a matter of us realizing how much we want to go through this process. But I do understand completely, Kathy, that thought about not even wanting to go to class. And I may comment on the other things you said later. We'll see. But first, I want to listen to everyone else. So, Tony, the mic is yours.
I'm just going to read what I wrote for the day, and then I'll make another comment. Beyond this world, there is a world I want. I do not know of another world at this time. I do experience glimpses of peace that seem to arise in my mind from nowhere. There are situations where I would see come, or that have no longer are upsetting me. Is this the inkling of the world that I want? Yes. I want to know a world of love, unlimited, and peace abound. What will I choose today? What will I choose in each moment? Holy Spirit, be with me on this journey. And I was always, well, I have a granddaughter that's 1 year old, and she is just the light of my life. I can't imagine not having her in my life and the love and the joy that I have when I'm around her. And so I know that she's included in this world, and the world that beyond the world of what I want. So sometimes it is very hard for me to recognize what more is there beyond this kind of a love and joy, the worldly love and joy. And I don't know what that is, but I do know that I'm doing my very best at staying present in the moment to be able to enjoy all those little subtle, unrecognizable things at times. And I do also want to comment about Kathy's comment that I do feel the same way at times. Like you just kind of want to, what am I doing this for? It just seems like sometimes you're not getting anywhere, and I know you're somewhere, but at some point you want to feel the results of, or the effects of the practice. So anyway, I'm just going to give up the mic. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tony. And, you know, Lynn is typing in the room, will I ever get this or awaken? So, George, why don't you go ahead and share?
Okay. Let's see. Yeah, I was having trouble locking the mic on. Lynn, I feel the same way. Will I ever get this? I didn't really want to share tonight. I never feel prepared to share, and yet having a program twice a month that I rarely have anybody participate. I know how frustrating that is, not getting any feedback. So, I'm doing the homework. I am spending more time listening to the radio during the daytime, which I find very helpful. And of course, there's other teachers. I love Muji. I listen to him a lot. But even though I'm doing more on a daily basis than I've ever done, I have this sense that I'm still not doing enough. So, anyway, I will stop with that. So, but thank you, Regina, for making this available to us, because I do feel that that we will get it sooner or later. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, George. And Sonia is sharing with me through text. She says, I'm here. I'm just on the radio. And she says, and I did want to be here. And then she says, but yesterday's lesson was a complete stranger to me too. Just words. And in fact, one thing you're going to find when I give the assignment today is that we're going to slow down. We're going to stick with a couple lessons for 2 days again next week, because it's beginning to feel to me like we're moving too fast through the lessons, and I feel like we should do a little more pausing. So we are going to do a little more pausing as we go through. You know what? Before I continue, why don't we listen to Irene? So Irene, the mic is yours. And Irene, you don't have the mic yet. Please try again.
I'm sorry, can you hear me? Okay, I'm sorry, I was having trouble with my phone. I may be sharing out of order here. I'm sorry if I am. I just wanted to share a little bit out of Hebrews 12 just because it was so helpful to me, and I felt like some people were feeling that not everything was really flowing this week, so I just kind of wanted to come on the other side. I'm just finding that everything that Nirmala is teaching is really gelling well with everything that we're getting through the gentle awakening. And so in Hebrews 12, it was talking about question everything by the heart. And for me, that would have just been words previously. But with the Living from the Heart book by Nirmala, really gives these great practices, which at least for me make that more than words, where I can actually kind of feel what it means. And then the Hebrews 12 goes on with walk slowly and surely, and that, you know, it'll show you the way to let go of the dreams. And then I also had to laugh when it went on and talked about have compassion when you catch yourself dozing, because I feel like my distraction is trying to catch up on sleep, and of course reminding us again that if we recognize it, you know, we're out of the ego. And then I just love the ending of it where it talked about that if we come through with the gratitude, that will give us the desire which leads to the faith, and that all of it will then be useful for the healing, which is up for our decision. So again, just thank you for everything. I think it's just all working together. And sorry about the delay with the mic. That was it.
Thank you very much, Irene, for sharing. And we're just happy we got to hear your voice. Nancy, the mic is yours. And you also do not have the mic yet, so please try again. I might be able to coach you. What are you working with? Are you working with a phone, or are you working with an old version of Pal Talk or a new version of Pal Talk? Mac with earbuds. Okay, so with the Mac, I think just down at the bottom where you see the microphone, there's a little lock, a little tiny picture of a lock. And if you just click on the tiny picture of a lock, that should take the mic for you. And then when you're done, you just click on it again to let go. So I'm going to release and let you try one more time. Okay. All right, I see that's not working for you tonight. So just feel free, if you want to share something, just feel free to type it, and I will read it for you. George has typed in, want to share without the mic because of a technical issue. Not lots of peace time, but in dealing with aggravating situations, my feeling are more compassionate and caring rather than with an edge competitive frame of mind. By the way, agree on fewer readings. all right, so let me, you know, we've had some people share some things that maybe some people might interpret as kind of depressing, kind of down, but let me just share a little bit with you all. Part of the purpose of the course is to push this kind of stuff up. Part of the purpose of the course is to push up our doubts, you know, like that doubt we saw typed in a while ago about, you know, I don't know if I'll ever get there. to push up our noticing our attachment to this world, right? It's to push it up into view so that we can look at it and practice forgiveness with it. So since that is part of the role of the course, we can expect these things to show up. And I used to call this part of healing the yuck. You know, moving through the yuck, because that's kind of what it feels like. You know, you start noticing how attached you are to the world, and, you know, how you really don't want to let go of the world. You know, you start maybe even noticing that, you know, it does seem to take a lot of time to do this spiritual practice, and you don't even know why you're doing it anyway, I heard someone say. But all of this is showing up so you can practice forgiveness with it, not so you can believe it. And this is why journaling is an important part of the process. At least for me it was. When I journaled these thoughts, I looked at them rather than just believing them. Somehow journaling, putting them down on paper, allowed me to look at them to see what the ego was saying to me, right? In order to slow me down, in order to distract me, in order to bring me away from this process. I will continue in a moment, but I noticed that Ken has his hand up, so let me turn the mic over to him.
Well, it kind of goes along with this topic of attachments to the world, and I've had the feeling since shortly after my moving to Colorado and Rebecca staying in California, that this was going to be my living in my cave, my man cave, since I'm the only person in the house, to work on worldly attachments, primarily my attachment to Rebecca, my wife. And there are times, because of our separation, and that's not marriage separation, that's physical separation, that it became very evident to me of how attached I am to her. And I thought I had resolved that a number of times. But then it came back up again, and resentment started to build. And in a moment of grace, and that's all I can call it, is just grace, because very much like people have been typing in here, it ever going to happen. And that's what I felt. And in that moment of grace, it resolved. And in that moment, I noticed the difference in how the awareness, watching awareness, was playing out, that there was a more pronounced separation between awareness and thought. And that I'm basically doing the practice of awareness, watching awareness, the loving all, for my entire waking hours, because I'm always watching my thoughts. I'm always, when I don't have a loving feeling about the thought, I'm watching that. It's going on all the time. I'm now asking the question constantly, who cares about this thought? Why is this important to me? Yes, George, brick by brick. And in this case, it's tearing the bricks down, the bricks of that wall, that attachment, the world. And anyway, asking myself, why is this thought important? Why am I giving it meaning by putting my attention on it? And it's become one of my mantras. In the past, it was, who wants to know? And that would always stop the thought. And now it's, why is that important to me? Why is that worthy of my attention? And that will stop it. And I knew that it was important to resolve this, because Becky is coming here to permanently now be in Colorado in 2 weeks. So if I didn't resolve this before she got here, it would not be as easy. And thank you to Grace. I hope it has resolved itself. I will know if it rears its ugly head again. If not, then I will celebrate the letting go of that major attachment for me, letting go of the mind.
Thank you very much, Ken. So what I would like to do is I would like to make a recommendation. Again, this is not a formal homework assignment. It is a recommendation. But I would recommend that, sometime in the next week, that if you are having thoughts that are somehow kind of depressing, or thoughts that feel burdensome, like this gentle healing thing isn't as fun as it used to be. there's too much reading. I don't have time. I'm not getting it. I'm not having the experience I expected to have. Whatever these types of thoughts are, I'll call them discouraging thoughts. I'm going to lump them and call them discouraging thoughts. You might just take the time and write down any discouraging thoughts you're having, and look at them, and then kind of ask yourself, are these thoughts helpful to awakening or helpful to the ego? Are these thoughts helpful to the awakening? And I wouldn't, and this is how I would do it. I wouldn't even do it as a group. I wouldn't, like, if there's 20 thoughts, I wouldn't write down 20 thoughts and then ask once, are these thoughts helpful to awakening or helpful to the ego? If I wrote down 20 discouraging thoughts, I would look at each thought and ask that question. So I would look at the first thought. Maybe, there's too much reading. There's too much reading. Okay, is that thought helpful to awakening, or is that thought helpful to the ego? And then I would go to, maybe the next thought. There are things I value in the world, and I really don't want to let go of them. Is that thought helpful to awakening or helpful to the ego? And just kind of do that with each and every thought. Because that's a part of what we need to be doing. We need to be looking at our mind in that way. And as I mentioned, the course is designed, to push up these things that we don't look at on a daily basis. And I think in the beginning, when we first started this process, I mentioned to you, that it could get difficult. In fact, I believe I even told you that at one point for me, and this may not happen to you, so don't expect it, but at one point for me, I was actually even getting physically ill once a month. That's just how much resistance was in me, and I was moving through as well as I could, but like once a month, I just had to stay in bed. It manifested as some kind of a physical illness, and then I get up and I get going again. So this process can be challenging. And this, again, I think, is why many people don't go through the process. They want it to be all peace and light and love and easy and happy. And although, you know, you could say peace and light and love and easy and happy is the end result, the process itself of does not always look that way. In fact, probably never looks that way. So keep that in mind, and remember when these discouraging thoughts come up, remember to take the time to look at them. I started by asking you about Lesson 129, and I'm really glad I did, because that's what started this discussion. And by the way, this is one reason why I want you to share. I want to know where you are in the process. I want to know what's happening with you in the process. Obviously, if I'm going to be working with you in some kind of a coach or a teacher way, I can do a much better job if I know where you're at and what's going on. So this is the reason the first part of the class is set up for you to give feedback. It isn't just so you can come in here and talk about your realizations, although I want you to do that too, you know. But if it's really getting tough, it's so that you could come here and say, this is really getting tough. You know, I'm not having fun anymore. I thought about quitting 3 times this week. You know, I need to hear that too. So whether you seem to be on a high right now with lots of realizations and lots of clarity and all of that coming, or whether it seems to be more of a low and you're like dragging yourself along, I would like to know that. I want to keep in touch with you as we go through this process. Okay, so Nancy writes, I'd like to slow down the class material because I'd like to spend time reviewing some of the material we've already covered. I'd like to have time to do this in my own way rather than having review assignments. Also, I've been keeping up with most of the homework, about 95%. I've done all the lessons and NTI readings, not all the videos. I've hardly done the Loving All method. I've been okay with that because it seems normal to me considering I'm remembering to do the lessons most of the time. However, I don't want the course to be over and get to a place where I haven't integrated it all. And you know what? You don't have to worry about that, believe it or not. Because the teaching goes around and around and around, which means it keeps teaching the same things over and over and over again. All spiritual teaching does that. Spiritual teaching goes in circles. So, you know, when you go through your first pass of a particular topic, you know, you may feel like, wow, I didn't quite get that. I need to go back and review. And there's nothing wrong with going back and reviewing. But the point is, it's going to come back around anyway. It's just going to keep going around in circles. And in fact, sometimes when you really do understand the material, you know, I have a pretty deep understanding of the material. Sometimes it can feel like, from that point of clarity, it can feel like, wow, you know, we're going over the same thing over and over and over again. I hope they aren't getting bored with the fact that this isn't changing. But again, when you're still absorbing the information and learning to practice the information, it can feel like you're moving through it pretty quickly. But it will go round and round and round. We'll keep touching on the same topics over and over and over and over and over again. Because there really is nothing else to go to. We aren't learning basics so that we can get to advanced stuff. You've already, in a way, learned everything. Now we're just going to repeat it and repeat it. There's nothing new. The learning is already done. There's nothing new to give you. There's nothing more advanced. It's just continuing it until we integrate it into our lives. But we are going to slow down a little bit. And remember, the course was designed for one lesson a day for 365 days. And we're doing it a little slower than that. But, yeah. Oh, you meant integrating the Loving All method? Well, you know what? We're going to go over the Loving All method again in a few weeks. We're going to read it again, too. So, so don't worry when that thought shows up. I think somebody even mentioned it. It might have been George that mentioned it. You know, I'm just not doing this good enough or something like that. Don't worry about that thought. Just keep doing your best. Just keep doing your best. That's all you could do anyway, and that's all that you're asked to do. Other than that, trust the process. All right. And I always forget this, what the C stands for. I don't know why I can't hold that in my mind, but the mic is yours. Chris, okay, sorry, I don't know why I can't hold the Chris. I was going Cindy, Connie. All right, Chris, the mic is yours. All right, so I see you're also having trouble with it staying on. That's the same trouble that Nam was having. Yeah, why don't you, I don't know what that's about, but why don't you just go ahead and type to the best of your ability what it was you wanted to share, and I will respond. One thing I want to go back and say about lesson 129, because 129 again, or lesson 128 and 129 can appear to be tough lessons, because these two lessons are saying the world I see holds nothing that I want, and for most of us it is not true. Tony gave an excellent example, that little, you know, grandchild, right? The world I see holds nothing that I want, and then beyond this world, there is a world that I want, and Kathy spoke to that very well. I can't even imagine what that is. I don't even know what that is, and if I imagine it, that's just imagination. So what happens between these two lessons for many of us is, you know, we feel this experience that you all were expressing, this experience of I want to call it limbo, this experience of limbo. But one thing that's really important in lesson 129, it says it might be worth a little time to think once more about the value of this world. The world you see is merciless indeed, unstable, cruel, unconcerned with you, quick to avenge, and pitiless with hate. It gives but to rescind, and takes away all things that you have cherished for a while. And Chris, I will get back to what you have written in just a moment. To me, that is very important to contemplate. For example, Rev Gloria is in the room. And Rev Gloria, you know, a few years ago had a beautiful little granddaughter, you know, that she loved and that she treasured. And at 9 months old, that granddaughter passed away. That's the kind of things that happen in this world. You know, things can seem to be going very, very well, and then some kind of a disaster can strike. And this is what, not just the Course, but any really good truth teacher. Any really good truth teacher wants us to pause and be honest about how fragile happiness is in this world. You know, at any moment we can get struck with cancer, or our loved ones can get struck with cancer. You know, right now, you know, the United States is concerned about the threat of a nuclear missile from Korea. You know, just anything can happen. And so really what Lesson 129 wants us to do is it wants us to look at the world and realize that the happiness we have here is fragile. And to realize we don't want fragile happiness. We want happiness that's constant, happiness that's consistent, happiness we can trust. So when we think about the things that appear to make us happy, like the grandbaby, you know, the nice house I live in, the great vacations I get to take. You know, it feels like I don't really want to let go of that. I love that, you know. But when we really focus on the fact that life really is uncertain, and we realize what we really, really want is something that is certain, something we can count on, that helps to motivate us towards awakening, even though Kathy was absolutely correct, we don't know what that is. We do know we want happiness we can trust, that won't be ripped away, you know, in a car accident or something very, very sudden and unexpected, right? So this is a part of what Lesson 129 was trying to point out to us. And in my tip that day, I talked about Michael Langford's teaching of choice A and choice B. You know, choice A being the happiness that we can trust that's constant, and the choice B being the more fragile world where there is always suffering. Okay, let's see what Chris wrote. What really helps me is practical applications. One of the most helpful stories was the tree that you chopped down. It feels like the more I learn, the more I want to control this process. And chopped down the tree. It feels like there are layers in letting go. I think I have forgiven, but it keeps coming up. Yeah. Absolutely. And you know what I came to at one point in my primary purification process was that it came up in bits and pieces because that's how I could handle it. I would not have been able to handle it if it came up all at once. It would have been too much. And grace knows that. So it comes up a little at a time. And then what the ego mind wants to do is say, oh, good, you know, I let that go. And then it comes up again. And it can feel frustrating to the ego mind. But it's really loving that it comes up at a rate that we can deal with it rather than being too much too quickly, right? So yeah, we just need to be patient with the process. It feels like a constant failure. That's just the ego. That's just the ego mind. And that's one of those discouraging thoughts you would want to write down and kind of ask, you know, is that thought helpful to awakening or is that thought helpful to the ego? Right? So just remember again that if you are doing this correctly, it doesn't always feel good. Right? So if it doesn't always feel good, it means you are probably doing this correctly. Cheryl has written, my willingness to take risks is like shedding of skin. It's not always been joyful. It's a work in progress for me. Yeah. All right, that kind of concludes the sharing part, but why don't I go ahead and just review the tips that I shared this week. That will give us a bit of a review since we went through some pretty deep material pretty quickly this week. So again, lesson 129, Beyond This World, There Is a World That I Want. That's really about looking at choice A and choice B, right? That's really about looking at the fact that even though there are things in this world that I enjoy, they can be taken away or they can, you know, turn bad. Things can turn bad in a moment, right? They can turn bad in a moment. Everything can go wrong in a moment. And realizing that what we really want is a consistent happiness, love that we can trust. And really contemplating that this week in order to help us be motivated to move on. The next lesson, lesson 130, it is impossible to see two worlds. It is impossible to see two worlds. And one of the things I talked about in my tip, which again, it's not the happiest message in the world, but that's okay. one of the things I talked about in the tip is that, again, the things that we value can be taken away in a moment, in a moment's notice. And no, I think actually that was a different tip. Let me take that back. I think that was a different tip. In this particular tip, it's impossible to see two worlds. I think what I focused on is awareness, watching awareness as the practice that would take us to see the world that is promised, the world of the self, the world of truth, the world of awakening. I talked about how Nisargadatta Maharaj says he trusted his teacher. And so he spent hours a day focused on awareness, watching awareness, or the way he called it is sitting for hours focusing on nothing but the I am presence in his mind. And he says, soon. And I think in his case, they say it was 3 years. That's what he means by soon. 3 years, not 3 weeks. Soon, peace and joy and a deep, all-embracing love became my normal state. In it, all disappeared. Myself, my guru, the life I lived, the world around me. Only peace remained, an unfathomable silence. So the idea it is impossible to see two worlds really means that either we're going to remain attached to this particular world, which again can let us down, and it can let us down quite drastically, or we're going to realize that what we want is that constant peace, that constant happiness, that constant love that we can trust and that we know can't be taken away. And then it will do what Nisargadatta did. You know, he said, I trusted my guru, and so I sat for hours a day and focused on the I Am presence. And again, right now, no one's asking you to do it for hours a day. We're asking you to do it for 15 to 20 minutes a day. But beginning to do that, beginning to put our attention on that awareness, watching awareness, because that is the pathway to this peace, this happiness that cannot be taken away that we're looking for, right? Lesson 131, no one can fail who seeks to reach the truth. The primary point in this particular tip was the word seeking. Because as you all know, it's very popular today to say, you have to stop seeking. You are the truth. Stop seeking. And as I pointed out in the tip, Ramana Maharshi also says you are the truth. He says you are the self. But then his very next sentence is seek it. We talked about this today in my MPP class because we're actually studying Ramana Maharshi in MPP. And we talked about the fact that you don't have to acquire the truth, right? The truth isn't something that needs to be acquired because you are the truth. But you need to pay attention to it, right? You need to pay attention to the truth instead of paying attention to the world. And this is really what Ramana means by seek it. You know, this is what we do in awareness, watching awareness meditation. We're, instead of paying attention to our thinking about the world, we seek the still awareness within and we pay attention to it. And Ramana Maharshi says that is the doorway to the infinite awareness. That is the doorway to this permanent peace, happiness, love, bliss that cannot be taken away. And so we are asked to continue to seek it, which means pay attention to it within ourselves, until we pass through the doorway and know the infinite. And that's a really important point because I think a lot of people stop before that point. A lot of people become aware that they are awareness and then they claim awakening, but they do not yet know the infinite. Right? It's just that the awareness has kind of popped forward in experience, you know, and so they're much more aware of awareness in their daily life. But if you ask them, do you know the infinite? They will say no. And so Ramana Maharshi is saying, continue to seek that awareness. Continue to pay attention to that awareness until you know the infinite. And do not stop until then. And, this is the same as I pointed out that Jesus said in the Bible, seek and you shall find, knock, and the door will be open to you, right? They were not saying you don't have to seek. but we do have to understand what seeking is. It's not an outward seeking. It's an inward seeking, finding the self and holding on to it, right? That's what they mean by seek. Lesson 132, I loose the world from all I thought it was. And there's a lot of stuff in Lesson 132. Lesson 132 even talks about things like healing the sick and raising the dead. What I felt to do in the tip was just break it down to the basics of this particular lesson. I don't think we should get caught up in debates about is there a world, is there not a world? Should enlightened people be able to raise the sick heal the sick and raise the dead? Or I think we just should stay away from all of that. I really do. I don't think we need to get involved in any of that intellectual discussion about what is or is not enlightened. Is there or is there not a world? I think there was something in this lesson that's much more basic and much more important to us. And that is this sentence. A madman thinks the world he sees is real and does not doubt it, nor can he be swayed by questioning his thoughts' effects. It is but when their source is raised to question that the hope of freedom comes to him at last. It is but when their source is raised to question that the hope of freedom comes to him at last. I feel that what we should be doing at this point is looking at the thoughts in our mind and simply asking, is that thought from spirit or is that thought from ego? Similar to what I asked you all to do earlier when I said, you know, write down those discouraging thoughts and then look at each thought one at a time and ask, does this thought help awakening or does this thought help ego, right? We want to look at our thoughts, and when we notice the source is ego, we want to let it go based on that alone. What we don't want to do, this talks about how the madman cannot question his thoughts' effects. So what we don't want to do, because it's not going to work, is we don't want to look out at the world and say, am I right? You know, let me make up a story. Let's imagine Francine. She would never do this, by the way. I just picked on her because she lives near me. Let's imagine Francine, you know, she has a key to my house and everything. Let's imagine she came into my house when I was away on a trip and she stole some stuff, right? And I know she stole it. In fact, even Danielle tells me, I know she did too because I saw your such and such at her house. I don't know what we should do about this, right? So Danielle and I both know Francine stole from me. And again, if anybody's just now starting to pay attention, this is not a true story. This is not a true story, all right? But in this made-up story, Danielle and I both know that Francine stole from me. So my mind starts thinking all of these, you know, mean thoughts about Francine. All right, this is what the teaching is saying. I look at the mean thoughts in my mind about Francine, and I ask, are those ego thoughts or spirit thoughts? They're ego thoughts, and I let them go for that reason alone. It has nothing to do with, am I right that she stole from me, or am I wrong? It has nothing to do with should she have stole from me or should she not. It has nothing to do with the world at all. It only has to do with, are the thoughts I'm thinking now ego or spirit? If it's ego, I let it go. If it's spirit, I maintain it. I keep it. If it's something to contemplate, I contemplate it. If it's guidance to follow, I follow it. But if it's a spirit thought, I keep it. If it's an ego thought, I let it go. That's really the only thing I feel like we need to pay attention to right now in lesson 132. I think the whole rest of it we can let go of. It just turns into intellectual discussion. But I do think it's very important that we start looking at our mind in that way. You know, it's not at all helpful to be able to talk about this if we do not practice this in our own life. So whenever you notice that you are thinking an ego thought, drop it based on the source because you do not want ego in your mind. And that's my tip for lesson 132. So that takes us on to lesson 133. I will not value what is valueless. And actually what I did with lesson 133 in the tip is I kind of took what I pointed out in 132 that, you know, we should just look at the source of the thought and either keep it or let it go based on the source. And I gave you a practical example of doing that using the method that is taught in 133. Now, the method that is taught in 133, you could say, is a little bit cumbersome, but I think in the beginning, sometimes we need cumbersome. A complicated mind needs a complicated process. As the mind becomes more simple, we can get by with simpler processes, eventually with just a glance. But a complicated mind needs a complicated process. So we're given this wonderful process in lesson 133 that helps us look and see if the source of my thought is ego or spirit. And it gives us some criteria by which we can judge. However, in order to really do this effectively, you may have to journal. I had to, right? But it gives us some criteria with which to judge. So basically what it says is, first of all, I have to accept that there are only two alternatives. It calls it ego or heaven. We could call it wrong mind or right mind. We could call it truth or untruth, right? But there's only two. It says, first of all, we need to accept that everything is one or the other. Everything. You can put everything in one bucket or the other bucket. It's ego or heaven. And then the second thing it asks us to accept is there's no in-between. You can't say, well, this idea here, you know, this idea that Francine shouldn't have stole from me, that's a little bit ego, but you know what? It's kind of true, too, so it's a little bit heaven. No, there's no in-between. It goes in one bucket or the other. It's either an ego thought or it's heaven or truth. There's no in-between. Once you've accepted these two, I don't want to call them assumptions because they're not assumptions, but another word is not coming to my mind, so agreements. Once you've accepted these two agreements, then you're giving three criteria by which you can judge any thought. And really, it refers to them as a choice because you choose a thought. Like, I choose to think that someone should not steal from me, right? That's something I choose to believe. So if you choose a thought or if you choose a belief or if you choose an action that will not last forever, it's ego. If it will not last forever, it's ego. If you choose anything that takes anything away from anyone else, then it's ego. And if you feel guilty because of a choice you made, it was ego. So we have three criteria. So let's go through my made-up story. This is not a true story. Let's go through my made-up story about Francine stealing from me. And again, let's pretend like in the world, this is a fact. Even Danielle knows it. She saw my stuff in her mom's drawers at her house, right? So we all know Francine stole from me. Okay, and so I have these thoughts in my mind about, you know, cutting her off. She should not be my friend anymore. I'm going to take my key back. I'm going to cut her off. I'm not going to spend time with her anymore, right? This is the choice I'm contemplating, cutting Francine out of my life. Yeah, you're dead to me. This is the choice I'm contemplating. All right, so let's take this choice through these criteria and see if we can discover if it's ego or heaven. If the thing will not last forever, it's ego. Well, when I die, that decision to cut off Francine is going to end if it doesn't end before then. So it can't last forever. But it could last the rest of my lifetime, and some people may get confused on that, right? But it can't last forever because even if I decide to cut Francine out of my life till the day I die, when I die, that's going to end. So it definitely doesn't last forever. But since some people would miss that, let's go on to something that's more clear. So if I make a choice that takes anything from anyone else, that choice came from ego. All right, now this one might be a little easier to look at. If I cut Francine out of my life, someone who was a friend, right, have I taken anything from her? Now, of course, the ego would say, well, yeah, but she took something from you first. That doesn't matter. Right? That doesn't matter. Am I taking anything from her by cutting her out of my life? And the answer is yes. I'm taking our relationship away from her. Right? The things that we, you know, my love, I'm taking my love away from her. Right? So right there, I know this choice is ego. But let's go ahead and look at the third criteria too. If you make any choice that you could feel guilty for, the choice comes from ego. Is it possible that one day I could feel guilty for cutting Francine out of my life? Well, probably. It's very possible. I mean, I can hear Danielle say, you know, my mom was just having a hard time. You know, you really should, you know, just kind of let it go. Just forget about it. That stuff wasn't, you know, and I might at least start listening to Danielle and hearing some right-mindedness in that I took a hard stance when I didn't need to. I'm not being compassionate, and I might start to feel guilty, right? So really, these criteria are there to help us learn to look at our thoughts and determine the source. Now, I notice Jacqueline has her hand up, so Jacqueline, the mic is yours.
Hey, thanks, Regina. I just, and I don't have the lesson right in front of me, frankly, but I did want to talk about that third criteria, the criteria of guilt, because I think this is an issue that we... certainly as Cordians can be confused on. My condition caused me to feel guilty if I do something that guidance would have me do, like not return a phone call, right? Even though guidance would have me not return a phone call. So I really felt like the lesson was saying, if you feel guilty, that guilt is from ego, okay? Because you might follow guidance, and then your ego conditioning kicks in, and then you'll feel guilty for it. But I felt like you were right on that first criteria and on the second criteria, but I thought the whole point of the third thing about guilt was, if you feel guilty, I guarantee you that's coming from ego. Yeah. So I just wanted to, to say that. And if I'm wrong, certainly please point out where I'm wrong. Thanks so much.
I don't think you're wrong. I just think that the exact angle of what the lesson is talking about here is it's trying to get you to look at the choices you're making in your mind. And so the way that I would say that in line with the lesson is, you know, the choice to not return the phone call was one thing, but then the choice to believe the judgment against myself later, that's the choice I made. That was ego, right? So this is really talking about choosing to believe certain things in your mind more than doing. So if I choose to believe, right, if I choose to believe something that's going to cause me to feel guilty, that is ego. So I think that's probably all I want to say about lesson 129. And again, lesson 129, it's somewhat of a complicated process. Again, you know, when you're first beginning, you may have to sit down and journal through it in order to, you know, really look at something that you're not sure about. You know, like I'm not sure, you know, let's say you don't have guidance to return a phone call. You just don't know. You know, like you had this, I had somebody who was calling me recently. Jacqueline, I think she may have been calling you too. She's calling me two or three times a week, and what I thought I would do was just remove her from the WhatsApp so that she could not call me anymore, because I really just didn't feel that it was helpful. And I couldn't figure out how to remove her, so Jasmine blocked her. I don't have any guilt about – you block your calls as well. I don't have any guilt about that. You know, that felt like the appropriate thing to do. It felt like letting her to continue to call me was kind of dragging something out that didn't need to be drug out. You know, I knew my calling. I knew my position. And you know, it's kind of like my answer was final. And I didn't need her to continue to call and call and call and call. So I feel I have no guilt about that. I don't think I took anything away from her because I actually wrote to her and told her why I blocked her. This was a friend in India, for those of you who would like to need to know a little more about the story. It was a friend in India who left her job and apparently, you know, from how the story goes, I'm not there so I don't know, is having trouble finding another job and needs money. And she called and asked for money once. I actually sent her more than double what she asked for. I sent her quite a bit of money. And then, of course, she calls and asks for more and calls and asks for more. And my feeling, my genuine feeling, is that I'm not helping her by giving her money. I mean, that's my genuine feeling. I'm not helping her by giving her money. And so I've decided to give her no more money. But, you know, then she calls, please help me, and all of this. So what I told her was that the reason that I was blocking her is that I did not feel it was my calling to give her money, and I did not want to extend that line of, I didn't want her to hold on to the hope, you know, that if she just asked me enough that I would change my mind. So I even told her why she was being blocked. So, you know, I don't feel like I took anything away from her. In fact, I genuinely feel like I gave her a gift. You know, I told her there's another answer out there for you. You need to look in another direction. So, you know, things aren't always as they appear. Some people might say, but wait a minute, you did take something away from her. You're not giving her money. But that's just not true. It's not how I feel, right? It's just not true. There's someplace else. I don't know where. I don't have her answers. But she needs to turn her head and look in a different direction. And all I did was, cut off one of the wrong directions that she was looking in. So now if ego started chewing on me about that, right? If ego started, oh, you know, you should have, blah, 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 then I might then I might feel guilty. And this is the point that Jacqueline was making a while ago, that maybe the choice was correct, but then the ego chatter later it causes the guilt. So sometimes you have to look at these things very carefully. But eventually you get to where you just learn. You can just feel within yourself. Like, there was no doubt in my mind that it's not my calling to give her money. And anybody who knows me knows that I do give money when it is my calling. I'm not at all, I give away quite a bit of money, actually. But it was not my job to give her money, and that I know. And so there's no guilt. I'm not taking anything away from anyone, because whatever it is she's supposed to find, she'll find it faster by me cutting her off in this case. And what was the other criteria? Oh, well, you know, it's not going to last forever either way, no matter what I would have chosen in that case. You know, I'm just following the guidance. I suppose what does last forever here is my choice to trust my intuition lasts forever. That can last forever. So by choosing to trust my feeling that it's not my job, by choosing to trust my intuition, that will last forever. So it's a spirit choice. So let's see, that was lesson 129. Then we went on to lesson 130. It is impossible to see two worlds. That's where we focus on the truth. Oh, I think I'm looking in the wrong place. I have my course not turned. We looked at 131, 132, 133. Let's go on to lesson 134. Lesson 134, let me perceive forgiveness as it is. And really, the point of this lesson is that the main point of forgiveness is it's letting go of the chatter in the mind. Right? Forgiveness is letting go of the chatter in the mind. And in fact, one thing that I wrote as I was spontaneously writing, this is a thought that had never occurred to me before. It came out of my fingers, but I really loved it. The thought that came through my fingers in that tip was that whenever we, you know, we need to let go of anything that we are dwelling on. Because if dwelling is happening, distortion and deception are also happening. And I thought, that's an excellent thought. I'm gonna keep that thought. Anything that I dwell on, anything at all, if I dwell on it, distortion and deception will happen. And it doesn't matter what it is. So that means that whenever we notice our mind is dwelling on anything, we know to drop it. I mean, that's four D's. Actually, drop it is another D. Isn't that funny? So if we see dwelling, we know distortion and deception are happening, drop it. And that, this lesson pointed out, is honesty. That's honesty. Recognizing that anything that your mind dwells on is becoming distorted and deceptive, and therefore dropping it. That's how this particular lesson defined honesty. I know the Course defines it differently in another place. But that's how this lesson defined it. So let's go back to this story then about this friend, which I actually do still perceive her as a friend, still hold her in my heart. You know, none of that has changed. But I blocked her so that she, you know, can't keep asking for money. Right? So let's say that you know, I had doubts about my intuition. And so I began to think, oh, should I have blocked her? Should I not have blocked her? And I began to imagine, you know, what her circumstance might be like in India. And maybe she really is have, maybe she's hungry. Maybe she's homeless, you know. And as soon as I start dwelling on that, distortion is happening in the mind and deception is happening in the mind. And so as soon as I notice that I'm dwelling on, should I have done that? I need to drop it. That's forgiveness. Forgiveness is dropping anything the mind dwells on. Forgiveness is dropping the chatter in your mind. If we go back to the entirely made-up story about Francine stealing from me, right? The entirely made-up story, you know? If my mind starts dwelling on, but I thought she was my friend, and, you know, I trusted her, and that's why I gave her the key to my house, and blah, 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 blah. As soon as my mind starts dwelling on it, drop it. That's forgiveness. We do not tolerate our mind dwelling on anything. That's forgiveness. And so that's what we want to pay attention to. And again, it's really just another way of saying what we said two lessons ago, that we drop it because of the source. If my mind's dwelling on it, I assure you the source is ego. So just because it's ego, we drop it. And although this is actually very easy to do, I found it very difficult to learn. Because the ego has all kinds of stories that will tell you about why you shouldn't drop it. For example, you know, let's go back to the story of this friend that I blocked so that she couldn't continue to ask for money, right? You know, maybe the ego starts up on some story about, you know, you just aren't caring. If you were in her position, you'd want money, blah, 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 right? And then I realize, wait a minute, my mind's dwelling on this. I need to drop it. Then the ego would say, no, you just want to drop it because you feel guilty. You know, you can't just drop this. This is something wrong you've done. And the ego would come back arguing that I can't just drop it. And so this is why I found something that's actually quite simple, quite difficult to actually learn and to bring into practice. Because the ego argued against forgiveness. The ego would tell me that I was guilty or that I was being dishonest by wanting to just drop something. And that's why the lesson indicates that actually you're being honest when you drop it. Right? When you notice that your mind is dwelling and you realize that that's the distortion and deception, and you drop it because it's distortion and deception, you're being honest. The reason the lesson has to make that point is because the argument that the ego gives in the mind is exactly the opposite. The argument the ego gives in the mind is you can't just drop this. That's dishonest. So the ego is very, very tricky. So keep that in mind. If you're dwelling on something, it is being distorted. You are deceiving yourself, and the honest choice is to drop it. And do not listen to the ego's argument that that's the dishonest choice. Trust the Course. I see Kathy says, can you comment on the question it asks us to ask ourselves, would I accuse myself of doing this? You know, sometimes I think, and I don't know whether I'm right or not, Kathy, so you have to take this with a grain of salt. Just based on my experience of being a scribe, sometimes I think the Course really is talking directly to Helen. And so my guess is that in Helen's mind, she accused people of things that she would not accuse herself of. That's the way her mind worked. And so Jesus was saying to Helen, would you accuse yourself of this? You know, so that's my guess. It doesn't apply for everyone. It applies for some people. Other people would be just like Helen, right? You know, other people would do the same thing. But it's not going to work for everyone because some people are much more accusing of themselves than other people. So my guess is that was more of a personal comment than a general comment. But that is a guess. Yeah. Yeah. And it's helpful to remember that the book was originally written to Helen. You don't want to use that to deny anything that's for you, but sometimes you can see that maybe a little specific sentence like that is not for you. that was for Helen. All right. So let's move on then to lesson 135. If I defend myself, I am attacked. That is today's lesson. And again, this is another lesson where people can tie themselves in knots. You know, and that's because the ego complicates things. You know, so this is the type of lesson that leads. I have been asked this question so many times as a teacher, I couldn't even begin to count. And I know I'm not the only teacher gets asked this question. You know, it's that very popular, what if somebody, you know, jumps out from behind a bush and tries to rape you? You know, should you protect yourself? You know, to me that's kind of it's a silly question. First of all, it's a what if. You know, it's a what if. Chances are it's never going to happen to you. I mean, it does happen to some people sometimes, but chances are it's never going to happen to you. So why are you even thinking about it? And secondly, if it does happen to you, you're going to do whatever you're going to do in that moment. You're not going to stop and think, you know, whether you fight or submit, you know, whatever you feel to do in that moment, you're going to do. So I don't really think that's anything that we need to talk about. As Sonia is texting me, she says, hallelujah. She thought the same thing, that comment about, it was for Helen, the one about, you know, would you accuse yourself of that? to me, the point of this lesson, all right, let's keep things simple. The point of this lesson is you should not attempt to control life. That's the point of this lesson. When you are attempting to control life, you are attempting to protect who you think you are. And control life includes all kinds of things. It talks a lot about health. So one thing we can attempt to do is try to control our health. And I don't know why it talks so much about Helen. I don't know Helen personally. Maybe she was one of these people that tried to control her health by eating in certain ways or whatever. And again, what she was really trying to do was control, right? Many people try to control their health. That's not an uncommon problem in America. But it also talks about planning. And planning, I think it uses as an example. You know, maybe in some ways you're trying to protect the body, but more you're probably trying to protect your psyche. You know, for example, let's pretend, I'm going to make up another story. Let's pretend I'm going to Seattle. I'm going to see Nancy and Stephen. But some idea gets in my mind that, you know, Nancy and Stephen aren't really happy with how slowly we're moving through NTI. And I get this idea in my mind that when I get there, Nancy and Stephen are going to set me down and talk about how the way we're teaching NTI together is not working. And I start thinking, oh, but that's going to make me look bad. Here I am, the scribe of NTI. I should know how we should do this. And I start planning what I'm going to say to Nancy and Stephen when I get to Seattle. You see, the purpose of that planning is to protect my psyche or to protect my self-image as the know-it-all scribe of NTI, right? And so that's really what you want to watch for when you're talking about, oh, and Dove says, yes, Helen was definitely a calorie counter, so she was trying to control. So, yeah, that's what I would have suspected. If she hadn't had some type of trying to control about health, my guess is that would not have shown up in the course. Right. It showed up in the course because it applied to her, but it applies to many people as well. So what we really want to watch for is that feeling of I'm trying to control here. Whenever we're trying to control, that's really what we want to drop. That's the kind of defense that we need to let go of. Defense and control in this case are the same thing. So if you have an attitude about life, you know, like Byron Katie has a great attitude that she seems to demonstrate in her book, 1,000 Names for Joy. And the attitude is, my body is my doctor's business. So she's not going to try and control her body at all. You know, if her doctor says, you know, I think you should take this medication, she'll says, okay, she'll take it. And if the doctor says, I think you should stop that medication now, she says, okay, and she stops. You know, there's no sense of control in there, right? No sense of control. No, oh, no, I think the doctor's wrong. I don't think I should be on this medication. I think I should be on that medication or whatever, right? She just, the body is not my business. You know, it's the doctor's business. And I, you know, and that's how I let it be. And, you know, and also as far as planning goes, I mean, there's some planning that happens, you know, like Francine and Danielle and Jasmine and I just decided a few days ago that we're going to take a little trip together. We typically do every summer with the doggies. And so it's always my job. I think I volunteered for it to find a place for us to stay. You know, and so I have to go online and I have to search the options. I have to find something that's affordable. Summer places in Colorado can actually be quite expensive. I have to find some place that has enough space for the four of us and some place that will accept the dogs, right? And then I make sure everybody else is okay with my choice. And then once we have the dates secured, I have to book it. You know, that kind of planning is okay. I'm not trying to protect my psyche. I'm not trying to control anything. I'm just planning a trip. And then the trip will happen or not happen. You know, maybe one of us gets sick or something and we have to cancel the trip. You know, maybe Danielle's boss says, oh, I'm sorry. I said I could give you those days off, but I can't. You know, maybe something goes wrong, right? It's not an intention to control. Yeah. So just watch that in relationship to this lesson. If you are trying to control anything, right? You're trying to defend either your psyche or your body in some way, and you are misidentifying with the psyche and or the body as what you are. You are holding up your false concept through your attempt to control. You may be saying, no, I'm just trying to be healthy, or no, I'm just trying to whatever, but look inside and see if that's true. Feel that. Are you trying to control, or are you letting things be as they are? That's what this lesson is all about, you know, when it says, if I defend myself, I am attacked. What's attacked is your perception. Instead of seeing yourself as your true self, you see yourself as your false self. When I defend myself, I am attacked. All right, so it looks like what I chose to do this time, which is a little different than what I usually do, was I chose to go over A Course in Miracles instead of going over NTI. But that was probably a good choice because A Course in Miracles this week was very, very deep, and NTI was actually kind of light. So you know, it's good that we used the time that way. And now I have another job to do. Now I have something to share with you, right? I always share something with you. So today, I am sharing from the teachings of Inner Ramana. I think I mentioned in the weekly gathering when Jacqueline was sharing from this exact same message, the self-inquiry message in the teachings of Inner Ramana. I said, we're going to be doing that in gentle healing very soon. Very soon being today. And if you happen to have the book, this message is short enough. I probably will just read the whole thing. So if you want to follow along with me, you may this time. So I'm going to be starting on page 65 of the teachings of Inner Ramana. The message is called self-inquiry. So I will just read from the top and then occasionally pause and comment. Today I would like to speak more on self-inquiry. This is Inner Ramana speaking. Today I would like to speak more on self-inquiry. We are introducing two inquiries, and they sound the same, self-inquiry and self-inquiry, but one is little s, self-inquiry, like false self-inquiry, and the other one is capital S, self-inquiry, like true self-inquiry. So tell you what, while I'm reading, for those of you who aren't following along, instead of just using the word self-inquiry where you can't tell the difference with your ears, I will call them false self-inquiry and true self-inquiry, so you know which one I'm talking about. So we are introducing two inquiries, false self-inquiry and true self-inquiry. The two are not the same. I will begin today by talking about false self-inquiry. False self-inquiry is questioning the false I in order to recognize it isn't truth. It isn't you. It is merely attachment to the mind. As false self-inquiry makes the false I self-evident, it is the decision of the true self that breaks the attachment to mind and lays the current story to rest. So what this is really starting to talk about is questioning the thinking. I introduced kind of a basic way of doing this earlier tonight when I said, you know, write down all of those discouraging thoughts and then ask, is this helping awakening or is this helping ego? That's an example of a false self-inquiry. You're questioning the false self, right? You're questioning the false self in order to see that it's not you. In order to see that it's not you. So let's imagine for a moment that Well, let's imagine from, let's go back to my imaginary story about going to Seattle, and I'm worried that Stephen and Nancy are going to tell me that I don't know how to teach NTI. All right, so let's go to that story. So I have these thoughts, and I'm at the airport getting ready to go to Seattle, and I have these thoughts, you know, about how, you know, Nancy and Stephen think I don't know what I'm doing. They think that I talk too much, that we're moving too slowly, that there should be another way of doing this. And you know, this is starting to worry me. What am I going to say to them? The way false self-inquiry would work is that instead of just sitting there and listening to all of this chatter in the mind, I would sit there quietly in the airport and I would question the thinking. You know, I might question the thinking, wait a minute. Where is this thinking coming from? You know, this thinking is coming from fear. Is fear of spirit or is fear of ego? Fear is of ego, then I will let it go. That would be an example of false self-inquiry. Or I might do it in the Ramana Maharshi way, which is, what is doing this thinking? And just noticing that it's the mind that's thinking. And then notice that I see the mind, that it's not my thought, and then drop it because I see it's not mine. I would say that even Byron Katie's The Work is a type of false self-inquiry, right? She's questioning your thinking with her four questions of the work. The lesson we looked at a while ago, was it lesson 129? I can't remember now, but the lesson that had the different criteria about, you know, will this last forever? Are you taking anything from anybody? Will you feel guilty for it? Right? That's a type of false self-inquiry. So one thing this lesson is recommending is that instead of just blindly believing whatever the mind says, that we practice false self-inquiry. We question our thinking to see if it holds up to the light of truth or is it the false self. So going back to the teachings of Inner Ramana, as false self-inquiry is repeated over and over again, the attachment to mind is weakened, just as the scratch of a razor blade weakens the strength of a rope. Eventually, the razor blade works its way completely through the rope, and the attachment to mind is broken. So the mistake that we make is not engaging in false self-inquiry, right? That's the mistake that we make. And when we don't engage in false self-inquiry, what we tend to be doing is just believing our thinking. You know, oh my gosh, when I get to Seattle, they're going to say this, and I need to say this, and then they're going to say this, and I really need to remind them that I'm the scribe of NTI. I know what I'm doing, right? We just believe it. But if we practice false self-inquiry, which most people just call it self-inquiry, of course, you know, if we practice false self-inquiry in whatever way we question our thinking, root cause inquiry is another type of false self-inquiry, right? If we start questioning that thinking, eventually we aren't so quick to believe our thinking. Eventually we actually see the chattering mind as meaningless. Which that was the very first course lessons that we started with, right? That our thoughts don't really have any meaning. But we begin to actually see that. It is just meaningless chatter. And so we start to naturally not believe it, naturally not pay any attention to it. So again, every time we practice false self-inquiry, it's like taking that razor blade and scratching across that rope again, and eventually that rope breaks. So false self-inquiry is something we want to repeat over and over and over again. And if you all remember back to Tess Hughes, that interview that we watched, you know, she talked about how she practiced self-inquiry. This is what she was referring to, this type of questioning. Let's see, the other night, I think it was about a little over a week ago, when Jacqueline was interviewing Fred Davis. Fred Davis talked about how he sat in his living room. And he just questioned every single thought he had over and over and over again, right? He was talking about what I'm now calling false self-inquiry, questioning the thinking. And you just keep doing it and keep doing it, and eventually the attachment to mind or the believing of mind breaks. It stops. And a Ramana says, some will also call this shining the light of awareness on an idea that is dark. When the light shines, it is darkness that disappears. And that is what's happening when you're practicing false self-inquiry. You're bringing light. You're bringing your awareness to the false self. And eventually the false self disappears in the light of your awareness. Now, true self-inquiry, also called self-inquiry, true self-inquiry is different than false self-inquiry. Okay? True self-inquiry is a form of devotion where you incessantly seek the familiar, like seeking the familiar arms of the one you love. And you do not cease the seeking until you find her and are fully in her embrace, assured that you can never lose her again. This is the purpose of true self-inquiry. It is seeking for the one you know. So earlier this week, when one of my tips focused on seeking, right, and I talked about the fact that, hey, Liz, Susie, and I talked about the fact that that Jesus says, you know, seek and you will find, knock and the door will be opened. That's referring to true self-inquiry. True self-inquiry is continually seeking within for the true self until you fall through or bust through the doorway to the infinite. And in fact, listen to these words again. True self-inquiry is different. Again, we're not questioning our thinking. This is really much more awareness watching awareness. Right? True self-inquiry is different. True self-inquiry is a form of devotion where you incessantly seek the familiar, like seeking the familiar arms of the one you love. And listen to this sentence. And you do not cease the seeking until you find her and are fully in her embrace, assured that you can never lose her again. You hear how total that is? The seeking continues until that point. And that's why it's not helpful when people say, you know, let go of the seeking, right? Stop seeking. You know, this teaching is seek until, you know, NTI says, seek until you are the truth. Those are the words of NTI. This is saying, seek until you find that love and you know you will never, ever lose her again. Or, you know, seek until you know the infinite, until you are the infinite, right? This is the true self-inquiry, that inward seeking. Now, here's what Inner Ramana says. True self-inquiry need not take a specific form. It is a desire, a devotion. My nose just got a big whiff of a Jamie fart. That's why I'm laughing. And then she leaves the room. Okay, true self-inquiry need not take a specific form. It is a desire, a devotion that remains awake in you until the goal is satisfied. True self-inquiry need not take a specific form. It is a desire, a devotion that remains awake in you until the goal is satisfied. In fact, true self-inquiry has many forms, and one seeker may use different forms at different turns along his path. But one thing is for certain and cannot be forgotten on the path of true self-inquiry. One must continually seek the true affection of his love, and he must not stop the seeking until he is certain that it has been found. So the type of true self-inquiry that I've been encouraging is the awareness watching awareness. And pretty soon I'm going to be starting to give you some other options. Already I've kind of given you another option, which was the open-eyed meditation with Elie Ruzdahr, right? But what you'll notice about each of the other options that I introduce is that they are all still seeking the true self. right? They all have that same goal. And what you need to do is find the one that feels most helpful to you, and then commit to that. And maybe that commitment will change. For example, I think I told you all that I actually started with the open eye meditation. That was most helpful to me. But now I go immediately to close eyes. So that has changed, right? So, but the goal, the seeking of awareness, the staying with awareness, that does not change, right? And that's self-inquiry. So lots of people think of self-inquiry as the question, who am I? And who am I can be a part of self-inquiry, no doubt about it. I mean, I often use who am I or what am I to turn my attention to the awareness. But it's not the question itself that really is self-inquiry. Self-inquiry is searching for, seeking for, and holding on to your inner self until you realize the infinite. Until you could never believe yourself to be the false self again. Until you can only know yourself as the true self. In fact, you can only know everything as the true self. And you can never slip from that again. That's how long the seeking is to last. So, back to the reading. Both false self inquiry, which remember is questioning thoughts, and true self inquiry, which is seeking awareness, seeking within for your true self. Both false self-inquiry and true self-inquiry lead in the same direction. The answer and the destination are the same. You may use either or both. As your teacher, I will remind you to question the false attachment to mind and continually devote yourself to self. And in fact, if you listen to a lot of different interviews, you will hear that some people appear to focus more on questioning their thinking, false self-inquiry. And some people appear to focus more on awareness watching awareness in one form or another, or true self-inquiry. But you'll also find that most people did both. You know, so when someone says to you, for example, well, you don't really need you don't really need meditation. You just need to question your thoughts, question your thoughts, question your thoughts. Well, you know what? Inner Ramana just said that was a possibility. Inner Ramana just said both inquiries lead in the same direction. You may use either of them or you may use both. And if some people say, well, I never really questioned my thoughts a lot. I just sat there and, like Nisargadatta might say, I just sat there and focused on the I am. And then I awoke. Well, Inner Ramana just said that's a possibility. But Inner Ramana also says, speaking to me, as your teacher, I will remind you to do both. I'm going to remind you to question your thinking and seek your true self within. And so if you wonder why Regina teaches both, that's because that's what her teacher taught her. But as you go through this, you may find, depending on who you are, that you're more like Bob Ferguson and Tess Hughes. You know, Bob Ferguson and Tess Hughes followed the path of false self-inquiry. And they're very, very good at teaching different ways to question your thinking because that was their path. Or you may find that you're more like, you know, Nisargadatta, Ramana Maharshi, and, you know, they spend a lot more time just in the awareness, watching awareness meditation. But for the vast majority of us, I really think it's going to be helpful if we do both. So what you're going to find me emphasizing in the Gentle Healing curriculum is both questioning our thinking and spending time watching awareness, paying attention to the true self. So again, both false self-inquiry and true self-inquiry lead in the same direction. The answer and destination are the same. You may use either or both. As your teacher, I will remind you to question the false attachment to mind and continually devote yourself to self. And then I asked a question. I said that at this point I felt to go to NTI and read NTI John chapter 3 verses 1 to 9. And I say, as I read, I saw that this excerpt clearly describes the answer to self-inquiry, to false self-inquiry, and it also describes the destination of true self-inquiry. Here is that excerpt. So this comes from NTI. The light is with man, and the light is in man. But the light is not known by man unless he welcomes it. Each man welcomes the light by his own choice and according to his own choice. But to know the light fully, one must welcome it fully. When a man welcomes the light fully, he ceases to be a man, and he becomes the light. For the light is a presence that denies the existence of man. It knows only the light. When a man becomes the light, he is the light, and he sings to all men of the light, as he knows there is only the light. This is what is meant by to be born again. The existence you seem to have before is gone as if it never was. And the new existence is all there is and all there ever could be. It is seen in all places, in all directions, and in all men, because it is truly all that can be seen. And so that's just saying, I realize that's where both self-inquiries point to. Both questioning false thoughts points to that point of knowing only the light or only the self. And seeking the true self within points to knowing only the light or only the self. So I realized that passage was talking about going all the way until you are the truth or until you are the infinite and not stopping short of that. After reading that, I asked Inner Ramana, is there anything else you would teach today? And this is the response. Watch the mind for thoughts which may be saying anything, but underneath the anything they say, they are truly saying, I am thinking. Question, who is the I that thinks? And you will discover the belief in an individual and separate I. That is the false I, which exists only in thought. So that was the final tip that I was left with. So, again, as we listen to different teachers, for example, if I remember correctly, and, memory can be faulty, so I might not remember correctly, but if I remember correctly, in the Tess Hughes video, when Jacqueline was interviewing her, Tess Hughes used the term self-inquiry, but she was clearly talking about questioning her thoughts. You know, where did I get that conditioning? Where did I get that belief? Right? And she called that self-inquiry. And also, you'll hear other people talk about self-inquiry, and they're clearly talking about like awareness watching awareness in one form or another. So it's important to realize those are two different types of self-inquiry that point in the same direction, and not be confused by the fact that the term is sometimes used in different ways. And again, I will be recommending that we practice both. Right, that will be my recommendation, because that's the recommendation the inner teacher gave me. But eventually you're all going to make your own choices. You know that's really what this is about, right? Eventually, yeah. Okay, but I would say try them both before you make a choice. Don't be too quick to decide one's for you and one's not. All right, so that was the reading that I had to share with you today. So now I am ready to share the homework. Unless, does anybody have we do have a little extra time here. So does anybody have a question or a comment about the reading on self-inquiry? All right, then. Let me give you all the assignment for the upcoming week. We're going to be doing workbook lessons 136 to 140. Yeah, we're trying various ways, Nancy's pointing out. We're going to be reading workbook lessons 136 to 140. And I did mention that we are going to slow down a little. So the last two lessons, we'll spend 2 days with each lesson. So we'll be with lesson 139 for 2 days, and we'll be with lesson 140 for 2 days. So we're doing lessons 136 through 140, and the last 2 days of the week will stay 2 days, and the last 4 days of the week will stay 2 days with the last two lessons, 139 and 140. We're also going to continue to practice the daily awareness, watching awareness meditation for 15 to 20 minutes each day. And again, often that is a part of the course workbook lesson anyway, so it's not anything extra. But if it's not, please add it to the workbook lesson. And then we'll continue to practice the Loving All method. I'll just review the Loving All method since I think Nancy mentioned she hadn't really got the hang of this yet. So remember, the goal is to love everything, both in the inner world, your feelings, your thoughts, and the outer world, your perceptions, right? Love everything. But if you can't, if there's something you feel like you cannot love, then just accept it. It is as it is. Accept it, right? And if you feel like you can't even accept it, and sometimes that happens, you know, like extreme violence, sometimes it feels very difficult to accept. So if you feel like you can't even accept it, then emotionally allow it, which means basically rest, accept, and trust with your own emotions about the situation. So again, that's one thing I love about the Loving All method is there's always something that we can reach. Right? If we can't love it, we can accept it. If we can't accept it, we can emotionally allow it. No matter what it is, there's always something we can reach. So we can practice it with all things. And that is the purpose of the Loving All method, to practice it with all things. Homework assignment B. We have very little reading this week other than, of course, the course lessons. We're going to read NTI 2 Peter, chapters 1 through 3. That's page 437 to 441 in NTI. NTI 2 Peter, chapters 1 through 3, pages 437 to 441. And then we have a video that we're going to watch. And if I remember correctly, it's around an hour long. But I could be wrong. The video is called How to Direct the Attention to Yourself. So you can see it's the true self inquiry, right? How to Direct the Attention to Yourself. And it's by Alon Jiva. Alon Jiva. He's from Tel Aviv. And it can be found in the Gentle Healing playlist. And my guess is Ken will also put the link in the homework assignment. He typically does. So watch How to Direct the Attention to Yourself with Alon Jiva. Oh, he says it's 45 minutes long. Okay, so the video is 45 minutes long. So that's the assignment for the week. So I hope you all enjoy it. And even if you don't, try to do it. Write down those discouraging thoughts and question whether they're coming from ego, whether they help ego or help awakening. And I will see you guys back here next Tuesday night if I don't run into you before then, right? Okay. Thanks, everyone. Releasing the mic.
Thank you so much, Regina. This is a wonderful class. It was so beautiful.